Iowa everywhere.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
Heartland Flags and Gifts presents Legends and Listeners with Scott Docterman and Chad Lystico. Fly them high and fly them proud. Find your flag at heartlandflags.com. Breaking down the Big Ten from the Channel Seat Studios, this is Iowa Everywhere.
Hey, Hawkeye fans, Big Ten fans, and Iowans everywhere. You are entering episode 33 of Legends and Listeners, a third of the way to 100, Scott, here on the Iowa Everywhere Network, live on this Wednesday from the Channel Seed Studios. I am Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register on one side of your screen. The other side, we've got the esteemed Scott Docterman of The Athletic. I like to keep you off guard with the intros each week, Scott. We're coming at you a day early because I'm flying out to Albany first thing in the morning. So come say hi to me if you're in the Des Moines airport super early tomorrow. We can chat. So thanks for adjusting your calendars. Lots on our menu today, Scott. Men's basketball portal news. Kirk Ferentz's spring presser. We'll see. If we have time, a little Iowa wrestling, perhaps. But first, undeniable, but that the biggest story in our world continues to be Caitlin Clark and the Iowa women. And I say our world, it might be the world right now. Yeah. From 5 million television viewers on Monday night for Iowa's second round win over West Virginia to Ice Cube's $5 million offer for Caitlin Clark to play in the Big Three Basketball League. Like, this whole Iowa women's basketball show just keeps getting bigger and bigger, doesn't it, Scott?
Yeah, every day there's something new, something bigger, and something more for people to complain about, I guess. So it's you'd never really truly arrived until the haters come out for you. And that's where we're at right now with Caitlin Clark. I mean, apparently sometimes athletes say bad words. You know, and I know that's a shock to people, but sometimes they get excited on the court and sometimes they get frustrated too, you know, and, you know, whether you're in traffic and you feel like you want to smack your head on the steering wheel and maybe say, let's go with a word in the middle. Sometimes that happens on the basketball court too, Chad. And I think some people are, you know, all up in their self-righteousness thinking, she's a role model. She can't do these things. You know what? She's a heck of a competitor. And sometimes competitors say things. And when all cameras and all eyes are on such people, things happen once in a while.
Yeah. And, you know, she is 22 years old. when I was 22, I mean, she adjusts to everything amazingly. So to like nitpick on like something that isn't even really a character flaw, it's just who she is, the competitor that she is. And you and I were courtside, you know, for that game. And it was like, it was physical, man. It was like so physical. It was intense. The energy was wild. It felt like so much pressure was on Caitlin Clark and the Iowa women. Heck, like at tip off, you've got an ESPN camera, like, you know, holding this thing in her face, like before the game. I mean, she's dealing with so much. Like, yeah. And I will say this, like, it's kind of funny. Like, I don't think anybody's even like mentioned this. Maybe they have, but like when Sydney Folter makes the game's biggest bucket, she says the same thing that Caitlin Clark says. Like,
yeah.
But nobody makes a big deal about it, you know? So, you know what I mean? Like,
there's a double standard there, Chad. I mean, it's because people look at her as, you know, this white Midwestern girl that everybody is adoring. And oh my gosh, she said a bad word. She went to a Catholic school. I mean, you know, how can you do that? You've got all these people watching you. You're a role model. You know, a men's player does it every single day, every single game, every single between every single media timeout. And if you want to ever hear swearing, go watch football up close. I mean, that is on every single play. So I hate this charade or whatever that people are pulling out here. Let's make this double standard. Oh, she's on some sort of a pedestal. And you know what? She's not perfect, but she's been pretty dang close because, as you said, the cameras are in her face 24/7 almost. Every time she moves in that arena or anywhere she goes, she can't leave the house without people hounding her. I mean, she's got a documentary crew following her around from ESPN all year round. On the floor, I mean, ESPN has a dedicated reporter just to her. And of course, we're all watching her with every movement. Every person in the arena is doing the same thing. And 5.5 million people were doing it from home the other night. I think we can cut her a little bit of slack because she might have said a bad word.
Yeah, and like to me it's just such a non-story, but it's just crazy how it becomes something nationally or whatever. Like you know, it's like new people tuning in maybe that weren't expecting it. I don't know, it's like, or else it's just haters that just want to pick on her.
Yeah,
so I think it's probably a combination of both. Like those of us that have been around, I mean, not like we're, I'm not saying like we're sensitized to it or anything like, but it's just like, this isn't like a story, everyone. Like this is competitive women's basketball. Caitlin Clark has been this way her whole life in terms of intense. And and I thought that the thing that maybe there's a hilarious tweet. I don't know who sent it. You see the clip like at the end of the game where like Jan and Lisa are like smiling and then they're like, oh no, oh no.
Yeah.
The clip, like it was when Caitlin was like, she was like clapping at the West Virginia bench. Like, you know, what they said about Senator packing. Like she, that was her way of, you know, she didn't, you know, wave anything. She was just like intense, like clapping, kind of clapping at him a little bit. And the ref talked to her a little bit, but there was a funny tweet by somebody that I just thought brought a lot of levity to. It was like, when they showed Jan and Lisa, it was like, it's like me drinking beers in the parking lot, coming into Kinnick Stadium, and then realizing Deacon Hill's at quarterback, like, oh no. It's just sort of like, anyway, it's funny. But anyway, she's intense. She's intense and it's great. We saw it from the first seconds of the game. I mean, she was getting hounded the whole game long and, you know, she scored, she dropped 32.
Yeah. I mean, she scored half of Iowa's points. In a 64 point performance, she scored 32. Yes, it was incredibly physical. The first half, they let them get away with everything. I mean, there were 11 total fouls called in the first half, only 7 on West Virginia, 4 on Iowa, and West Virginia being a very physical team, and that was the one way it could win. I mean, I kind of looked at it almost like the Big Ten championship game in reverse. For football, that West Virginia played defense like Iowa defense plays. You know, that's the way that you're going to win that game, that you're going to have to drag them down in the mud. And then in some cases they had to see what the officials would call and how they would officiate it. And I think if there was, you know, I've seen some people complaining about, you know, oh, look at the free throws, look at this. Yeah. Well, it's not an even, you know, it's a false equivalency to think that the fouls should be the same, the free throw should be the same. One team fouls, the other team doesn't. That's what gets called. It shouldn't be called both ways. It should be called the way it is.
Yeah.
And
that's one of my pet peeves. Like when officials like try to even out the fouls, like I hate that. Like call the game like it is.
Exactly. I've seen, on men's basketball, there was one time I was at Penn State and even, you know, a couple of the Penn State reporters were like, God, look at all the fouls they're calling on Penn State, nothing on Iowa. I'm like, because that's what they're doing. They're fouling. That's the style that they were playing under Pat Chambers. West Virginia was very, very physical. And that was the way to grind them up. In the first half, it went completely their way. I don't know if something changed after halftime, if they decided, you know what, we got to start calling things a little bit tighter or what. But that's what enabled Iowa to come back, was because West Virginia was getting too touchy and too physical. And Iowa matched it, I thought, fairly well at times. I thought in the second quarter, especially, even though it was a 9-6 quarter, that Iowa, Gabby Marshall and Hannah Stolke in particular, got very physical. And I think that needed to happen. Gabby Marshall was one of the best players on the floor and didn't score a point. Yeah. But still, women's basketball, it's very competitive. They're not out there just to smile and wave to the cameras. I mean, they're out there to exactly. to play hard and play physical and play tough. And Iowa's in the Sweet 16 for what, the third time in the last four tournaments? Does that sound right, Chad?
Yeah. 3 out of 4 for Caitlin.
Or yep. 3 out of 4 for her, and 4 out of 5 overall because they had that ghost right. year, and then with Megan Gustafson.
Elite 8 that year.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, and I think Kate Martin, she's the last holdover from the Gustafson era. So, she's been to this level almost every time, save for the Creighton situation a couple of years ago.
Yeah, this whole team, just a great story, a fun story to cover. I wrote a lot about the Sydney Folter bucket. I know you wrote a lot about just sort of like the crowd and the relationship that they have with this Hawkeye team. It's all such a gripping tale. I'm glad for our sakes that we get to keep writing about it. I wasn't quite ready to write the season obit on the Iowa women just yet. So this is fun. And now we get into some really big matchups, Scott, including, up next with Colorado, the team they faced in last year's Sweet 16. I actually rewatched last year's Sweet 16 game last night before I went to bed, just to kind of remind myself how that game went. And, number one, Colorado's a really good team, and they got almost everybody back from last year. They beat LSU to start the season. Mm-hmm. They've been very competitive in the best the deepest conference in America, yeah. which is the Pac-12. This is a dangerous matchup for the Hawkeyes, but, I came away from that. A couple takeaways off this game, off the last year's game, and what it means for this one. I felt like last year, after they – busted out of that tension against Georgia, they got that Creighton monkey off their backs. I felt like they just played so much better once they got out of Iowa City. Honestly, mm-hmm. I felt like it was almost a detriment because of the heaviness of that crowd that day. Mm-hmm. And I felt the same, similar type of feel. I felt like they just needed to get out of this because there was a lot of really good round of 32 games. I mean, UConn got taken to the wire. Ohio State got beat. LSU was down for quite some time against Middle Tennessee. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to advance out of these games. Indiana almost got beat. So I don't know. One of my theories, Scott, is that now they're going to play a little freer. They're going to get out of Iowa City. They're not going to be – I mean, maybe they'll still be mobbed wherever they go, but, like, it's a little different. You're just in a hotel together, not too many distractions, kind of like Iowa football going on the road. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That'd be a great comparison there. I mean, the one disadvantage, or there's a major disadvantage with going to Albany, and that is that your wonderful fans can't all go. I mean, if it was in Indianapolis or, a 6-hour radius from Iowa City, you can bet that there'd be a big flock. Or if it was an easy flight, in Atlanta or Dallas or someplace like that. The fact that it's so remote from this tournament, hurts that part of it. But as you said, kind of getting breaking away, there's still going to be a lot of fans there. There's going to be a lot of fans wanting to see Caitlin Clark from New York City area or the East Coast, where they'll be able to get there. But I think that it is a good thing that they are now kind of breaking away from that. And then Cleveland will be a different environment. It would be into the Final Four if they make it that far. One the thing is, I looked at Colorado. I haven't watched a lot of film, but I have, you know, just kind of compared statistically and how they performed this year. And, you know, and you're right on about the Pac-12. You know, it's too bad this is the last year for the Pac-12 because it was the best and most complete and deepest conference in the country. And, that, you know, they have, you know, four pretty good wins, I would say, LSU, Utah, Stanford, and USC. I mean, so they've beaten, you know, the defending champions in the season debut. They've beaten a number one seed in USC, and they've beaten a number two in Stanford that was really close to being a number one. And then they have a lot of losses that were, you know, against tough teams. I mean, they lost Oregon State three times, UCLA twice. They split with USC. They've lost to NC State, who's a pretty good team. And I think they're in the Sweet 16 too. So they, but their competition level has been really, you know, stout all year. And I think Iowa's in a comparative kind of angle there. And looking statistically at Iowa against Colorado, I think they, Iowa's stats are a little bit better in every key area and not by much, but enough to notice that, okay, Iowa's just a tad better in field goal percentage, assist to turnover ratio. The one area that Iowa can totally exploit in this matchup is 3-point shooting percentage. They're 311th on defense against the three.
Really?
And if they play a freer style of basketball, I mean, they allow, you know, 34% from three. If Iowa can get up and down the floor and play its transition game and shoot threes and make them the way they're capable of, this could be a boat race, kind of like last year was 87-77. But Iowa will have its best chance for victory if it can do that.
Yeah, Iowa was in a, I think they were down one at half last year against Colorado, had a nice third quarter surge and just kind of kept that 10-point margin most of the rest of the game. Monica Sinano with a really big bucket late in a 4-point game. Mm-hmm. So it was a good solid win that launched mm-hmm. Iowa to the Louisville matchup. And then, of course, the Final Four. I want to say thank you to Heartland Flags and Gifts, which helps us bring you legends and listeners every week. Heartland Flags and Gifts has you covered for your sports fan needs with nearly every sport, every team, and every flag. They offer free shipping anywhere in the U.S. Almost time, Scott, for me to break out my Chicago Cubs W flag, hopefully in the season opener, right? Mm-hmm. Visit our friends online at heartlandflags.com, or better yet, in store at 3719 Southwest 9th Street in Des Moines. Speaking of Colorado, my old colleague Sean Keeler, who works for the Denver Post, had an article on Caitlin Clark, because they're facing, he covers, you know, Colorado. He covers mm-hmm. Dion. He covers Colorado. So one of the players he talked to said, you know, they want to get in Caitlin's head. They're going to try to get in her head in this game. Here's the other quote. Caitlin's very emotional. So for us, it's like we can't feed into her emotion that she's going to play with, because she's going to fall. She's going to throw up her hands. She's going to talk to the refs. But at the end of the day, we can't focus on that. I don't think I would poke the bear, Scott.
I think it works a couple of different ways. And when she's frustrated, it can kind of come back to haunt her a little bit. I think that was the case on Saturday. And again, we're talking about a 22-year-old woman. You know, we're not talking about somebody like Michael Jordan, who's been through, you know, everything. And I think this has been a really testing year because she's had so much attention upon her. But when she is playing free and doing the things she wants to do, she likes to poke back, you know, and she's more than capable of doing that. And I think that's fine. And I mean, if you're Colorado, sure, try to play into it. Makes sense. You know, maybe you frustrate her, but I think West Virginia was a better team for that type of scenario, because they were so physical and they were a great defense. No questions asked there. That's the type of one where you can poke the bear, get her frustrated, make her throw the ball, make her throw her hands up, get mad, yell, scream, cuss, maybe get her teed up. But if you're playing a style of basketball that's really similar to Iowa, you can try to do that, but you're going to give them more room, more space to maneuver, you know, and give her more opportunities to pass the ball in the post, to shoot, to pass the ball in the perimeter. You know, so I don't know that this is the matchup that I would do that if I was Colorado. I mean, I'm not saying Colorado can't beat Iowa. Colorado can beat Iowa. Colorado is a very good team, but this is not the type of matchup that I would say, yeah, let's just go out and take it to Caitlin and talk all kinds of smack. It's just, you might want to watch it just a little bit.
My hope, I guess, or thought is, I think she's got her teammates have to help. They hit no three pointers in that game against West Virginia, zero in that game. But just, you know, some in and outs, some tough misses. They had open looks, didn't make them. So, you know, if I'm Caitlin Clark, I trust my teammates. They've made them a lot this year. They've had games with 17, 20, 20 some three pointers in games, including recently at Minnesota in the Big Ten tournament. You know, you got to trust that Kate Martin, Gabby Marshall, Sydney Fulcher, heck, Taylor McCabe, maybe off the bench. Kylie Feuerbach has had, you know, some hot nights, you know, from deep in recent weeks. So I would just get them involved as much as possible, because I think that's what West Virginia, when I went to their open locker room, they're like, we're going to make the other girls beat us. That's what they told me. I think that's probably going to be Colorado's plan as well. So, you know, stick it in their face. Show them that those other girls can beat them. And Sydney Fulcher, great example. She did. She took it to the rack and, you know, sent West Virginia packing.
And what was really fascinating on that play, that sequence, was you had another great block by Gabby Marshall. And then that fueled the transition. And you also had Caitlin Clark wide open around the half court line, demanding the ball, and Sydney just decided, no, I'm taking it, you know, and she took it all the way to the hole and went up with her left hand and drew contact and scored. And, you know, she said a bad word too. And, but you know, that's what happens when, you know, it was 52-52 and then she scores and gets the extra point and goes up 55-52. And, so the role players stepped up big on that sequence. I mean, Gabby, you know, we've said, you know, all along is a 3-and-D type of player. The other day, she had to be a D player. I mean, that was really what she was asked to do, and she was just relentless. And what I really liked about her was once she knew how the game was officiated, she got more physical. She got closer to the ball. She got in the way. She had her hands up. She was talking. She was talking to her opponents. She was talking to her players or her teammates. I know there's been some people saying, oh, she needs to do more. She didn't score. You know what? Sometimes when your role is what your role is. And she played it to perfection on that side. You know, yes, you'd like for her to make shots, but in reality, it was more about just do what she did. And if she needs to do that again, that's fine. I think this is the game though, where you want her taking more threes.
Yeah. And, you know, again, going back to last year's game, you know, Kate Martin hit a bunch of threes in that one against Colorado. McKenna Warnock was good from deep. So you do have to have some help. You know, it's amazing actually, Scott, that Iowa scored 6 points. That was a season low in the second quarter of this game, and then shot 1 for 10 in the fourth quarter and still survived. So they had to find a way to survive in advance. A couple more minutes here on women's basketball. I wanted to take it a different direction. We didn't talk about this before the show, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Like, I watched the end of that, well, you know, most of that Iowa State Stanford women's game the other night. It was some of the best basketball I've seen at any level, you know, any college level for sure, in March Madness. And what I loved about that whole deal was I saw so many Iowa fans that often are kind of, maybe even Iowa State haters, kind of rooting for the Cyclones, applauding the Cyclones, enjoying the Cyclones. Wow, that Emily Ryan, wow, she's made Audie Crooks. Wow, you know, like, you know, that was a terrible call. You know, like, there was part of me that night that was like, ah, man, I wonder if I should write a column about this. But like, could we get to a point where it felt nice to see for me. I loved seeing it. Like, I can't stand Cyhawk Week. I know you can't either. It's because of everybody else, you know. It's like, so I was like, you know, could we get to a point where, like, let's start it with women's basketball and like, maybe Iowa fans can root for Iowa State and Iowa State fans can not root for, but like, you know, they're an in-state team with a cool coach and, you know, are likable coach, I should say. Yeah. You know, likable players. Audie Crooks, how can you not like her? I don't know. Like, it felt good in the state for like 24 hours. Then a night later, it's just like, nah, we're back at it again. You know, like, I just didn't, I felt like there was an opening there for something, and it just fizzled.
It's tough because I don't ever see that going to happen in the men's sports. I don't see it happening in football or men's basketball. I'll say that being the vocal minority / majority are not going to be actively rooting. They'll either A, ignore the other team, or B, root against them. And it is different, you know, as you know, growing up in Iowa City versus being in the Des Moines metro area or central Iowa, where everybody in central Iowa, you're either one or the other. Here, it's you're one largely. There's some of the other, and then, but the thought process is more eastward, you know, and more in Big Ten version. But what I do appreciate, and this is one thing I've really grown to like about women's basketball the last few years, is that they're very positive in the way that they root for their team, the way they root for each other. I've seen that with a lot of the really mostly women on Twitter, for instance, that are just very positive, you know, towards Iowa State. They won't root for them when they're playing in Iowa, but they'll root for them all year long. Very excited about Audie Brooks and then likewise Crooks and then likewise with Iowa State fans are the same way. You know, when with women's basketball, the women's fans. And that was my big fear with Iowa women's basketball growing, was all of a sudden, oh crap, you know, they're all these kind of people who are normally men's basketball fans and football fans are going to jump in and they're going to be critical over every single loss and every single, oh, she can't play. She Bluter should have went to the portal, blah, blah, blah. You know, the stuff we get in men's sports. Women's fans aren't like that. They're like, oh man, you know, I wish they would have done this, but they don't really get too rabid. And I like that. I like that you saw that, noticed that too, because that's the way they've been. And I think it can happen in women's basketball, because I do think Iowa women will be that way. But the only way that it turns like that, Chad, or that will get people agitated, is when other fans start to poke at them over this type of stuff.
Yeah, I guess it was just a fleeting thought of optimism and hope for our world, but yeah, back to reality. Last thing, I mean, DRF Sportsbook has Iowa -7.5 against the Buffaloes. Came out at 9.5, I think, to start. I'm kind of leaning towards taking Iowa in this one. I've liked the underdogs in the first two rounds. Hit those. I think Iowa might blow them out this time.
Mm. Wow, that's very optimistic. That's a good number. I think that's one that Iowa can reach, and I think if Iowa plays well, Iowa can certainly do that. They might be a little bit unshackled, you know, because at home, certainly against West Virginia, but as you said, you know, it added pressure when you're in that pressure cooker, and it was an amazing environment. I mean, as good as we've seen in any basketball arena ever, but it's the pressure for the home team. And even on Saturday against a 16 seed that had nothing to lose, they played tight. They played, I wouldn't say tentative, but they just, you could tell the pressure got to them, especially Caitlin, you know, and she got frustrated because she wasn't making shots. And if they play loose and free and they're in that environment and having fun, you know, there's no reason why they can't go to Cleveland too.
Well, Scott, want to thank our friends at Steeple Ridge Bourbon for their support of Legends and Listeners. Steeple Ridge delivers a high-quality, delicious drinking award. You got some there, do you? Award-winning craft bourbon. If you don't find Steeple Ridge at your favorite retailer, ask for it by name. Steeple Ridge is distilled, aged, and bottled in Erling, Iowa by Lonely Oak Distillery. You take it from here, Scott. Do you want to go men's hoops or football? What's your preference?
You know, let's stick with the basketball theme here. You know, now we're at the obituary phase for men's basketball, and this was in conclusion for this season, Chad. I think overall it met it probably exceeded my expectations just a little bit. I thought that this was a good coaching job by Fran, because you walked in and the season, I kind of like said, it was like warm jello. It just had no mold. It was just, you don't know where it's going to go. They didn't have, every other year they've had somebody walk in that's really been the bell cow, or, you know, a Jordan Bohannon or a Luka Garza or a Keegan Murray that you knew, okay, they're going to take off. Chris Murray last year. This year it was like probably Peyton Sanford, but he really wasn't the starter, you know. So that you really had some questions about this team, and but I thought they did a nice job of putting it all together. However, the same old kept them from taking the next step, you know, getting to the NCAA, making it a really good season. And in the two of the most pivotal games of all, you know, Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament and then Utah the other night in the NIT, the same issues bit them again. You know, 3-point defense, you know, against Ohio State, they allowed, what was it? Eight out of 11 from three in the first half and got down and couldn't really climb back. And then the other day at Utah, they allowed 7 3-pointers in the first half and just some really defensive miscues. I mean, they're just terrible defense and allowed 91 points. They allowed 90 to Ohio State. And it's just, you know, I understand what the fans feel, you know, and I've watched it for a long time, but it's just like something has to change on that side of the ball. You know, it's not Brian Ferentz offense levels for Fran on defense, but there really needs to be some sort of, you know, within, you need to start looking and analyzing what you can do differently or better on defense, because you're just not going to win big games, you know, championship caliber games, important tournament games, if you can't defend better than what they did the other day.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Looking to refresh your closet, home, or beauty routine this spring? Walmart's got all the stylish goods in one stop. From chic new looks and the latest makeup to quality furniture and tableware. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending for the hottest fashion, home, and beauty finds. Your style at Walmart.
And sorry, I was putting out a fire at work right there, so maybe I'm going to duplicate what you said, but obviously Tony Perkins enters the transfer portal. Did you mention that?
No, Chad.
Okay. Sorry. Perkins is in the portal. So, you know, we know DeSante Bowen's in the portal. We know Patrick McCaffrey has said that was his last year at Iowa. Yeah. So a lot of roster turnover coming. I think that was not necessarily any surprise. I didn't feel like anybody that had been following it. I think he could get some nice offers out there, shall we say, for his COVID year, potentially. I mean, he's a second team All Big Ten guard who can play defense and can score in the lane, and you know, he had an injury late in the season. That's why his stats suffered. And you know, we've seen that before, Scott. Guys get banged up, they don't really talk about him much, and you know, their production tails off and everyone's like, oh, he sucks. But you know, at one point he couldn't even like lift his arm. So
yeah,
you know, give him a little grace. I know Hawk fans are all over him, but that's crazy. He was a great Hawkeye for 4 years. I hate to see that. So silly. But roster wise, we're definitely moving into the Brock Harding, Josh Dix era. Peyton Sanford, if he comes back, you know, that would be a big bonus for the Hawkeyes. Owen Freeman, yeah. Can't believe I didn't mention him.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, there are some good 4 freshmen plus Dix plus potentially Peyton Sanford. That's a good starting point.
I think they're at a good foundation for next year, if provided that's what happens. I would have liked to have seen Tony Perkins come back. I think, you know, sometimes I think Iowa fans tend to eat their own. I don't know if it's like that in every fan base as extreme as it is here, but it just seems like every time there's something going on that you're like, ugh. And a lot of times they're the in-state guys that really get it the worst. But I like the foundation if they can keep Josh Dix, if Peyton Sanford can return and Owen Freeman. I'm not sure yet if Brock Harding's a primetime player or a really good role player. But, you know, they lost Desante Bowen to the portal, which makes sense. I mean, he wasn't playing very much. Patrick McCaffrey has an extra year and chose not to take it. And Tony Perkins is leaving in the portal. And I really think that would have been a big lift for them. But again, kind of to my original point there is that, you know, they were third in the Big Ten in total offense or in scoring offense, which actually was the first time in, 5 years that they weren't first. But again, they were 13th in scoring defense, and they were 13th in field goal percentage on defense. And scoring, you could rationalize the scoring a little bit by saying, look, we have a lot of we have a high tempo team. There's a lot of possessions. You're going to allow more points. You're not going to play slow down ball and score in the 50s. But the field goal percentages need to come down on that side of the ball, and they just don't. They're always high. They're always among the worst in the Big Ten, and this is a situation where they've got to figure something out on that side. You can't just play offense in this league. You know, no matter the sport, you got to play defense. And Iowa, that is what is preventing Iowa from taking the next step in basketball, and that's why I think in part why Iowa fans are apathetic towards this program. It's not that they don't appreciate the winning, and there's a big picture element to this, the basketball, that, you know, will take a lot more than this podcast. But I think when people look at this, and the ones that are on kind of the fence of, well, should I go or not? It's because, well, ultimately, you know, against Ohio State, which is your last big chance to get to the tournament, you allow 90 points, you allow 8 3-pointers in the first half. You couldn't cover anybody with a blanket, you know. And then this one, you allow 7 3-pointers in the first half and you allow 91 points. And it's just the same old. And they've got players I think are capable of doing it. They're not bad defenders necessarily, but whether it's schematic or it's teaching or whatever, they need to do something a little different. This is not as extreme, but it's in a similar vein to what's happened on Iowa offense in football. They just need something different. They need a different focus. They need a renewed focus, maybe somebody else teaching it. And I think I'm, if it doesn't change, you're not going to dig out of this with the fan base. It's going to remain the same.
Yeah, I think the only thing that can really break through the apathy would be winning a lot. And even then people are going to be skeptical, like, well, let's see how you do in March, you know, and that's fair. It's fair. Mm-hmm. It's been a really good run. It could, you know, next year they could be really good, but mm-hmm. I totally agree with you on defense. It's just, it gets old, just like the Iowa offense. That was a great comparison. I hadn't really thought about it that way before. I like what you said there. Cause it does. It's like, we've seen it, you know, Iowa fans just, they're getting tired of this offense. Like, they do keep coming back because it is football, but you don't have to come back through winter storms at 8 p.m. on a Tuesday to go watch basketball. You're not tailgating with your buddies. That's different. Right. You know, mm-hmm. you can easily elect to just stay home and, you know, watch a Big 12 game, honestly. Yeah, right. So, as far as defense, I mean, go get a rim protector. You know, when you had Adam Woodbury, your defense wasn't bad. You're top 30 in the nation in KenPom. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying 7'1" guys that play good defense grow on trees, but you've done it before. And yeah. Gable Lashaney, he was a good defender. Get somebody like that. They don't have to, you got enough scorers. You can coach offense. We know that.
Right.
Go get a guy that can protect. Maybe they don't even cost that much in the portal. Who knows? Get a defender in there. Get somebody in there that can make it difficult on your opponents. I mean, that was the biggest disappointment with Ben Krikey, was he was not good on defense. Like, that, he was exposed every time he was on the court, and they knew it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you just can't keep up in scoring with forever with some of these teams. So, good analysis. You know,
yeah. I mean, these teams, when you get to the Big Ten, you've got to do it both ways. You just can't be a one-dimensional team, and it's not dissimilar from say the a lot of the zone offense, zone reads that end up, you pass for 70 times a game. Sometimes you're going to have to shut them down too, and they don't. And that's what we're facing with Iowa men's basketball. And as you mentioned, it's to the point now where it's gone from skeptical to cynical, and that's scary because, and it's their own fault. I mean, like in 2021, when they're a number two seed and then they get beat by 15 points in the second round. And then the next year, their momentum was building. They had Keegan Murray. They won the Big Ten tournament. And then you get bounced out in a 5-12 matchup where they were getting kind of de-pantsed on defense. And then last year it was like, oh, here we go again, against Auburn down in Birmingham. And then this year, I thought it was a great coaching job by Fran. I thought he did a really nice job because this team just didn't have a lot of, it needed to be molded, and it was. But then there were just areas where it's always been a problem, and it never changes. I mean, when you're looking in this year, here they allowed 79.1 points per game, which is the most under Fran McCaffrey. I mean, that's wow. Pretty high. I mean, the worst one before that was the year that when they were really bad, the only really bad a year, and that was 78.7. So that's the most points they've allowed, and going back, who knows before that. So you got to get something corrected, or you're asking your fans just to come support the Hawks because they always did. Well, there's a little bit more to it, than 2024 than there was in 1994.
Exactly. And certainly women's basketball, I believe, mm-hmm. will continue to be wildly mm-hmm. popular.
Yeah.
They're bringing in good recruits down the road here, like actually coming in, but then even the next year, obviously Addie Deal, I think they're probably going to get some more. Exciting times for the women. And people, except for my parents who go to every game, like not everyone's going to trek out every single night and, they'll probably choose the women over the men, and it's cheaper. So, let's move to football, Scott. We got Kirk Ferentz on Tuesday, and that was fun. First time we'd heard from him since the Tim Lester press conference. What did you take away from Kirk yesterday?
There are a couple of different factors I thought that were really interesting. And, there's the Caden Proctor discussion, of course. But I think more than that to me was just how he described. And I think you asked the question about just the relationship between him and Tim Lester, how that offense is going to work. And you brought up, I think, the Greg Davis comparison when he came in. And I thought Kirk answered it really well, which is when he came in, it was his terminology with the passing game. We married it with our run terminology, and that's how we decided to go about it. But this time it sounds like it's more of this is Tim's playbook. And he's going to run it the way he wants to. And it's challenging for all of them to learn it, including himself. And admitting that, I thought, was a big step. So I was more interested in that type of angle than I was anything else. And, because everybody wants the sound bites on Caden Proctor, and that's part of it. But frankly, to me, it was, I want to know the details of this offense, because that's going to be a key for this team, because in complete reverse of the men's basketball team, they've got an outstanding defense that's returning. Now it's, maybe the best in the country. It certainly was last year in yards per play allowed, and they had 200 more snaps against it than the number two team did. But if they can move that offense forward, and if they can jump up and score more points and get more yards, then this team could be very competitive in the upper third of the Big Ten. And I came away with that Kirk really is bought in and is willing to take that step, which I wasn't so sure about going into yesterday.
Yeah, definitely. That was probably maybe the number one thing that I took away from Tuesday was, we're using Tim's playbook. He's bringing it to us, and we're going to learn what he wants to do. And Kirk mm-hmm. even kind of mentioned, like, I'm having a tough time keeping up with the verbiage, but it's more important that that play caller be completely comfortable with it. So maybe he learned from some Greg Davis mistakes. I don't know. But at the same time, of course, you get the Kirk, we're going to still play complimentary football, defense first, special teams, you know, not be careless with the ball. No. And you and I both agree with all those things. Like, there's nothing wrong with that stuff. You just have complementary football has to also include offense.
Right.
It's not a two complementary football isn't two thirds good, punt the other one. You got to be good. You got to be decent at all three. And Scott, they could be a playoff team this year if they can figure this out between now and September.
Exactly. I mean, you take, you know, people have, you know, loved to lord it over, you know, oh, when this league goes to, you know, no divisions, and when they're playing all these other teams. I mean, look at Washington. I mean, they've had, I think, 27 players hit the portal, you know, since their coaching staff left. UCLA's coaching staff left. I don't think anybody should be concerned about UCLA at this point. I mean, I'm not saying that they can't win and be good, but there's nothing to concern you now. And then, you know, likewise in the division, you know, they're playing their rivals, you know, which they should. And then they're going to Ohio State, but they're not playing Michigan. They're not playing Penn State. They're playing Michigan State on the road for the first time. And it feels like a century. And, but not only Ohio State do I look at on this schedule and go, man, that's going to be a tough one. I mean, that's one that, you know, you're going to struggle with. So let's say that their offense is at least looks the part. You know, 11-1 or 10-2 isn't out of the realm of possibility. And if that's the case, and you're in a 12-team playoff, they got a real shot to get in that top three or so in the Big Ten. And, you know, I think that the way Kirk has decided to go ahead and buy in and take, you know, and maybe be more of a CEO. And I agree wholeheartedly, like you do, with complimentary football. It's the term that I think people cringe at because he's leaned on it so hard over the years. But for an Iowa, you do have to play that way because you don't want to put your best unit, your defense, vulnerable, you know, because you're making careless decisions on offense. You just need to be better at offense. You know, they need to, you know, and if they scored 32 points a game like they did 4 or 5 years ago, then it's no problem at all. But, you know, they've got to, of course, got to get more than like one first down and a half, you know, to win some of these games. Yeah.
Well, that will be the most fun for us to unpack. And, you know, Kirk's never going to give us details. You know, the assistant coaches are going to be our best chance to unearth some stuff. And I can't wait to hear from Tim Lester. Honestly, George Barnett also high on my list. I think the offensive line has a lot of questions. And, of course, Lester can also speak to the quarterback position, Scott, which is going to be a major factor in this team. Cade McNamara, you know, Kirk Ferentz thinks will be ready to be full go in June. That sounds good to me. That sounds optimistic, but good. Kind of typical timetable, I would say, 8-9 months off an ACL.
Yeah.
So that's good, but you'd gotta have an insurance policy. And right now it kind of stinks that Cade's not going to be, you know, running the offense this spring, and that you're going to have Deacon Hill and Marco Linez basically competing. That's what it sounded like to me, is they're competing for the backup job. I still don't feel like that's enough, Scott. They've got to probably go get somebody, right?
Yeah, I expect that they will. I just, you know, and the other part with Kirk willing to buy in on the portal, you know, he said that. And I mean, and I have him right now at 91 scholarships, so they're going to have to get some attrition there anyway, and they will. I mean, there's going to be a couple players are going to see their place in the world and want to move on, and there's going to be a couple that just aren't healthy enough to really compete at this level, and they'll get medicals or they'll leave too. But yeah, I expect them to go in the portal and get somebody and expect that person to be willing to start, you know, and make it a competition. And if that person can't win the job, then at least push Cade McNamara to be better, so that if something happens again, injury wise, or he's just not performing, because he wasn't real good the first month. Granted, he had the quad tear, strain, whatever you want to call it. And that prevented a lot of things, but I think he, you know, with if they go out and get a good backup, you know, somebody who's maybe got another year or two, because, you know, out of what I saw with Marco was he was tremendous running the ball. I'm not as sure about him as a passer, and Deacon Hill, I'm not sure with him at all. And so you need to have somebody, you know, after this year. Even if Cade's good, he's gone. So what's next? Are you confident in who you have? Your evaluations previously weren't very good. That's obvious. So you're going to have to figure that out and make up for it. And you can do that. You can do that in the portal. But yes, I think that come by May 5th, I could see them having somebody lined up.
Okay. Yeah. It's hard for me. Just if you think about it, big picture, like Tim Lester is not going to come here and decide, you know, I want Deacon Hill running my RPOs if Cade McNamara goes down. He's going to want to have his own guy. I mean, Cade McNamara isn't even his guy, you know?
Right.
You know, so it's just, it all makes sense that they would need, he would want that.
Yes.
And you got, I mean, there's no way Kirk doesn't know that.
No.
So, you know, I feel like it's got to happen. And we know Brad Heinrichs is great with the Swarm. Amazing what he does and goes through, honestly, for no pay. I want to give him a hat tip, how good he is at his quote unquote job, which pays nothing. It's thankless, but, you know, I expect that they'll be in okay shape to get a quarterback of some type, but I hope anyway. I mean, that would be, if they don't, I think that's almost malpractice, unless like they go through spring and, you know, Marco's lighting it up like crazy. That's the only way I could see it.
Well, and that's really where, you know, that's a good healthy part of this, which is give Marco Lanez every opportunity to be number two. If you feel like at the end of camp that, you know what, I think he could win this or be the second guy, and if he needs to play, we'll be fine. Then there's no need to do that. Then you feel good about your future. You feel good about your present. But if you come away going, and frankly, the fact that they never flipped until after a pick six in the bowl game, you know, it makes me question, you know, a lot of things too. So, and the other part of it is, Chad, we never did get to it yesterday, and I feel kind of like I left something on the table, the wide receiver position and the wide receiver coach. That needs some major boost, and that could be another NIL/portal situation, or I want to see some major growth this spring. Caleb Brown was good, but let's not fool ourselves and think he was like he arrived last year. You know, he was a decent player, but they need three other receivers. They need Seth Anderson to be what he was at Charleston Southern. They need, a couple other players to really move up. Jacob Bostic or Jarrett Bowie or Dayton Howard or, you know, a walk-on. It doesn't matter. Caden Wiegen, you know, something's going to have to – they're going to have to take some steps forward because you can't run a quality offense having a receiving core like they've had the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I think this is another case where fresh eyes is going to help a lot. Yeah. I think, you know, whether you like the John Budmeyer hire or not, you're at least getting, you know, Tim Lester and him, hey – this is what we want to do, which guys fit the best, what we want to do. Right now, they've got Caleb Brown, Jacob Bostic, Seth Anderson, Jarrett Bowie as the four receivers on the depth chart, which means nothing. The depth chart means nothing currently. So it's a piece of paper with names on it. Didn't write a post about it because it's really kind of meaningless at this point. Anyway, Scott, I'm going to give you the option here. Do you want to talk about like the rest of the men's and women's tournament real quick, like picks or, you know, how we feel about the Big Ten? Or do you want to go – do a little wrestling, dabble in some wrestling to finish. Your call.
Oh, let's go heads or tails. Let's go to the tournament here. Okay. You know, and we can wrap up wrestling maybe in a week or so. And that, I think one thing is, we were talking a little bit about this before we went live. Is there a more difficult matchup for Iowa men's basketball fans than to see in the Sweet 16, where they haven't been in 25 years, Chad, your two biggest basketball rivals going head to head, and the winner is going to the Elite Eight, and both teams have a chance, I think, you know, even though UConn's right next door to Boston, but I think both teams are playing pretty well, and you're just like, oh, can both teams lose? But I'll tell you this, and I'm very excited to watch that game. So that's my first impression on the tournament. I don't know what you think here.
Yeah. So here's my advice to Iowa fans watching this game. By the way, tips off at like 10 Eastern time in Boston. That's crazy. So just factor that in. Just bet the over and root for both teams to score. Like that's the way to do it. Then you can take your fandom out of it. Just bet the over. That makes it more fun. You don't have to worry about it. Then you can root for points.
Yeah, but one of the teams is a great defense. You know, one of the teams has a great offense. The other team has a great defense.
Well, bet the under then.
Yeah.
And you can root for them both to fail. How about that?
There you go. That's the answer is root for them to miss a ton of shots. And it's 8-4 at the under 12, and you're like, you know, and you hate, and you're laughing because everybody's miserable watching.
I like the over. That's all I'm saying. So, could this be the year Purdue showed me something? You know, Purdue, we talked about the Big Ten's drought since Michigan State and Mateen Cleaves. UConn does look like a juggernaut right now. Hey, maybe Illinois or Iowa State could step on UConn's path to the national championship. But I like Purdue. I like their path. I would like to see Matt Painter get to the Final Four. I think that, yeah, he's a likable coach. He's a great coach. I almost feel like I want Purdue to get to the Final Four at this point.
Yeah, he's my favorite coach in the Big Ten. I mean, to deal with, you know, and I kind of look at it from that perspective, that he's always honest. He doesn't shirk anything. He doesn't give you shortcuts or doesn't, well, you know, he's pretty straightforward with his answers. They have a very good program, probably is the best program right now in the Big Ten, you know, and Purdue is a heck of a basketball environment. It's a basketball school. The last time it went to the Final Four was the same year Iowa did. Surprisingly enough, and they've had some great teams that have failed for bad luck reasons, like when Robbie Hummel got hurt, you know, 15 years ago you know, the big dog was there. They were really good then. And so I'd expect that would be a good story. I mean, Purdue versus Iowa State, that is a real battle of their most hated rivals, you know, for the old crossovers for legends and leaders, you know, the Boilermakers and stuff. So, and then I would imagine there's some Iowa fans who are pretty jealous right now of Iowa State as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, because in the COVID year, you know, they're 0-18 with Steve Prohm, and they fired him. And then 2 out of the last 3 years under Ott's, you know, they've been to the Sweet 16 again. Last time that happened was the last century for Iowa, 25 years ago. And, so all those players who are in there are at least in their middle 40s. That needs to change. And you're looking at Iowa State, it's like, hey, we do it every year. So, ha-ha.
Yeah. I like Purdue. I like Purdue to get through their bracket. But obviously Gonzaga first and then potentially Tennessee or Creighton. It's not going to be easy. But Purdue playing really well right now. So, women's side, do you think Iowa makes the Final Four, Scott?
I picked them to begin the tournament. I think it's going to be a challenge, no question. I think I agree with you with this one, that I think this sets up nice for Iowa because you're playing a comparable team. You're just better at that. Mm-hmm. The next one will be an all-out battle, you know, whether it's LSU, which – you know, we're talking ratings for the women's, you know, Iowa crushing it the last two games. I mean, can you imagine LSU Iowa on Monday night? Angel Reese versus Caitlin Clark. I mean, you're talking probably 8 million viewers, you know, for something like that on cable. That's out of this world. And, you know, you'd be lucky enough to see it in Albany, New York, of all places. Mm-hmm. But yes, I do. I think they'll get there. I think South Carolina is the team to beat. I mean, they're going to win it, in my opinion. But I think I had Iowa going to the championship. I just, with number 22, I'm not ruling out anything.
Yeah, I kind of think they get there. I think, you know, Caitlin has a way of making the magical happen. So I'm going to roll with that. Still, I stuck. That's who I picked. I picked him to face South Carolina in the finals and lose. But there is a scenario. There's an interesting scenario here, Scott, that Iowa could go Pac-12 the rest of the way. You know, Colorado, UCLA, USC is the would be that Final Four top seed. Yeah. And then, heck, I don't think it's impossible that Stanford, with that size, could compete and beat South Carolina. You know, that's probably the longest shot of the four, but it's possible. But Iowa will face, future Big Ten brethren, UCLA and USC, right?
Oh, exactly. You got UCLA. You got a really good chance to play them. And then, you know, I'm sure they would love to have Juju Watkins versus Caitlin Clark, you know, on television as well. So this is, it sets up nice. It's going to be fun. It's going to be entertaining. And if I, the farther Iowa goes, I think the more, you know, more opportunities people will get to, you know, just witness this history one more time. I mean, I've never seen a team that we've covered. Sorry, Chad. That I've never seen a team that we've covered just be so close to a fan base. And that's not just Caitlin Clark. That's Kate Martin and Gabby Marshall, people who fans reference on first name basis, like their neighbors, or they babysat their kids, or, you know, just the love affair, the true love that they have for one another. And there's an appreciation that the players have for the fans that's unlike what we see in the other sports too, because it's new, it's different. And so, you know, the longer it continues, the better this ride gets. And I hope for their sake, they at least get to the Final Four, because I just think it's such a great story. And then we'll see, you know, people get sad because they say bad words once in a while.
Hey, legends and listeners, you know, just like a good article, Scott, we come full circle. We come right back to where we started. So
yes,
good job by you. Thanks a lot. And hey, talk next week. All right, for Scott Docterman, this is Chad Lystico. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday edition of Legends and Listeners from the Channel Seed Studios. Next week, either previewing the Final Four or putting the completed Iowa women's basketball season to bed. Talk to you next week here on the Iowa Everywhere Network.
Iowa Everywhere.